Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 428 of the JV Club with my boy of summer, Jarrett Hill. He is one of the hosts of the fantastic, the fantastic Fantai podcast. If you recall, I did an episode with Travell Anderson at some point, and I just think both of these two folks are so fabulous. I loved my conversation with Jarrett. It was one of those that I just sort of walked away from, grinning from ear to ear and feeling like my brain was full and processing and chewing. And I'm going to stop using mastication verbs because I'm starting to gross myself out. And this episode does not deserve that. I loved it. I hope everyone is doing well. And I will talk to you next week. I feel like I haven't seen you in a while, and I feel like was it Max Fun Drive? I feel like I got to see, I feel like my Max Fun Drive had you in it more than this last one, and I kept wondering, I was like, oh, where?
Well, because Travell and I hosted Max Fun Drive live last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever that was that like August or
I don't know. July,
sometime
August?
Sometime in 2020. Yeah. Because that whole year is a blur.
Yes.
But yeah,
you know what?
Right.
Let's call it a smear. It's not a blur.
You're right. It was a smear,
it's a
right?
Smear.
It just kind of just happened. So
yeah.
So what do we do here? What's the plan?
Well, I just pick a random spot on my face and I ask you to tell me what you think of it. No. I'm gonna grill you about amongst other things. I'm not gonna grill you, but I would love to talk with you specifically about your teenage years.
Okay.
And how they were. This very clunky. I'm saying this like you wouldn't think that I've been doing this exact concept for 9 years. I'm like, then how?
Like just starting out. Yeah.
Now I assume you were a teenager. I guess I should have asked that before we started the podcast. I don't know if you
I actually
were
skipped
born
that
later.
Whole
oh
part of
God,
my life.
This is so. What am I gonna do? Okay. No. Where did you grow up? Were you a mover arounder, or were you kind of settled in? And did you go to high school like at the same place?
No, yeah, I'm originally from the Bay Area, and I grew up in Northern California, in a small-ish area of Northern California called Sassoon and Fairfield. They're like sister cities.
Wait, isn't Fairfield where James is from?
James?
Yeah, Arthur?
I don't know, but if we have another like Fairfield Sassoon connection here at Max Fun, that would be crazy.
Is there a, like an Air Force base kind of near?
Yes.
Oh, honey.
Shut up. Travis Air Force Base.
I wish I could take a couple of weeks ago's episode and just smear it right into this one and just put
what?
The two of you together. He fully went there, lived there, was like a mean girl to survive is sort of
wait, how old is James?
I don't know.
30-ish?
Probably.
Oh my God, wouldn't it be crazy if we like went to high school together or something? Like,
I mean, I'm telling you for sure, he absolutely lived there.
That's bananas. Okay, well, we'll have to do that research off air.
Well, you would remember because I think he was if you were there at the same time, I think he was like the president of his student council.
Okay, wait. Now, what is his last name?
Arthur.
James Arthur.
James Arthur M. Actually, so it's possibly that the M is. Part of my podcasting was not. I did not pry into what the M is, but James Arthur M.
James Arthur. I don't know him. Very handsome, but we don't know each other. I don't think.
I have to say, this is a delightful piece of
this
information
is
that is rolled out.
Okay.
I know. What if I just proceeded to tell you all about his teenage years and forgot to even ask you about yours?
Or you were like, he's actually from Cleveland, just wanted to make a left-hand turn. But anyhow,
you've heard of pranks, right? Mine
exactly
are very
right.
Gentle, but also very annoying.
She's like, we're actually going to bring in your ex here now.
Right.
I grew up in the Bay Area in Fairfield. I went to Fairfield
God.
High School. I did not move, so I was there all 4 years. And my teen years, it's funny because as I think about my teen years, I remember so little about middle school, but high school I'm pretty tapped into.
Yeah.
I remember like a few specific instances from middle school, and I'm writing a book right now and a pilot, and like I'm having to like excavate all that stuff, and I'm just like, I don't remember any of this. And so I'm like having to talk to friends and like pulling different things out. I'm like, oh, I do remember that. Yeah. I was a conflict manager in seventh grade and stuff like that.
I'm sorry. Let's back up. I mean, come on. Like, you threw that out there knowing that I was going to chomp down on that so hard.
Yeah, no.
How adorable. What? I mean, first of all, I should not in any way look askance at that or make fun of it, because the worst times I had with, like, conflict were 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, where that's when I was bullied. That's when, like, a kid kicked me in the stomach who was a boy.
Oh, no.
Like that was when the most kind of, like, just shitty behavior was happening to and around me. And I feel like I wasn't seeing that or subjected to it in high school. So actually I could have used a conflict manager, a seventh grader who was also a conflict manager.
It's funny because like in my like leadership roles now, I've had to do a lot of like conflict management with like getting two people to have conversations with each other and stuff like that. And so I remember after having done it like the third or fourth time this year, I was like, oh my God, I was a conflict manager in seventh and eighth grade. Like, I've been doing this forever. And so between that and like being personal assistant for like a love, sex, and relationships therapist, I've gotten a pretty good sense of like how to, you know, deal with folks and like being the middle person. But
how does that happen? How are you a conflict manager in seventh grade?
The thing that I have, how did that happen in seventh grade? I think I just always kind of liked being involved in stuff and like finding different ways to like be a part of like different groups or whatever. And I don't remember how it started, but I definitely remember like, you know, having different instances where like two different students were having a conflict and they would like call me out of class and be like, hey, we need a conflict manager. And we had like an office that we got to go into.
I mean, like, that's not a thing. That I don't think that that's necessarily.
It's funny because I've never seen it anywhere else. And like, it probably should go in a show somewhere because I've never seen it anywhere else.
But like, it's so Wes Anderson, you know what I mean? To be like, I'm a child. Let me go ahead and sit down these two other children to show how mature you could be, even at our age.
But there were like forms. There was a form to fill out.
Oh my God, this is outrageous.
I don't remember a whole lot about it, but like, I remember. There was like a group of us that were conflict managers.
Remember to get your paperwork in, like a police officer. Like, do not skimp on that report.
There was a note or something that we had to figure out. I totally should go back and find this. But
this is fabulous.
But yeah, seventh and eighth grade, I was a conflict manager. And then when I went to high school was just... high school has always been really interesting to me because I had such a different perspective on it at the end than I did like going through it. Mm. So as I'm writing about it now, I'm like, wow, I had a really completely wrong perspective on my high school experience. So it's
like all the way through it, or like you sort of had it, you're like, why couldn't I have had the perspective I had at the end?
No, absolutely. So yeah. I don't know if this is what you wanted to dive into right now, but we totally can.
I'm great with whatever.
So the story that I feel like I remember the most from high school came from senior year, and it was homecoming, and like we had homecoming court or whatever. And I had run for homecoming king, and like you had to like submit your name and you know put posters up all over the school and all that type of shit. And like I campaigned really hard for it. And so, like, the night of the homecoming game comes and we're out on the football field where I guess they also do sports. And we were in front of the stadium. And, like, all of the nominees are down on the field or whatever. And, like, we are, like, they're announcing, you know, the different names of the people or whatever. And so I'm a senior. And so they have, like, freshmen, sophomore, junior, prince, and princess. And then they come to senior prince and princess. And so they say the princess's name and they say Jared Hill. And I'm like, holy shit, I won. And so I, you know, I'm there in front of this stadium of people. And I go and I stand in the space where you know, I'm supposed to stand or whatever. And so I'm standing there. I'm like, oh, my God, this is happening. You know, it's probably very homosexual with like a pageant kind of moment. Like, oh, my God. And as I'm standing there, I hear them say, and your homecoming king, just as the person standing behind me goes, excuse me, could you scoot over?
Oh, no.
And I realize I did not win. I got second. And I lost homecoming king to be senior prince. And Dean Bosanquet was the homecoming king. And I was like, no one in the stadium knew that I had done something wrong, but I'm fully humiliated.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, I look like an idiot. Yeah. Again, no one knew. And so that was like what I carried with me throughout the rest of the school year, not even acknowledging like people voted for me. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
And I got prince.
Yeah.
So fast forward to the end of the school year, and I have carried around this idea that people just hate me, right? Like, oh, I lost. I'm, you know, and like,
what an amazing thing we do to ourselves to just punish ourselves for whatever.
Completely what therapy has been for in my adult life. And like, I get to prom, and it's like, I had no idea that I was even nominated for prom king. And until I got there to vote, and I'm like, well, I didn't even like fucking campaign for this. What the hell? And then I won. And so I was like completely disoriented by like, you like me. You really like me. It was ridiculous.
Well, I want to take this a step further. Dean, could you come in here, please? We have got a surprise for you. I am trained in seventh grade level conflict resolution. It's simple. It's a one form situation. I will fax you.
It's
your
bananas.
Part.
Like Dean Bosanquet, I think he's like a pilot now. He was always like really hot and like
he sounds like really... he does kind of sound like our generation's Sully Sullenberger or whatever.
Oh
like,
my God!
And remember how Dean? What's his name? Dean
Bosanquet. It's such
Bosanquet.
A good name.
Dean Bosanquet landed that plane when nobody thought it was possible. Dean? Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
Get on out here.
Yeah.
He's like in a leather jacket with like spiky hair. Like, you know that guy.
Or perhaps you know the hair, the wind is always blowing his hair, even though you're like, there's no wind. What's happening? How is his hair
it's
being
ridiculous.
Gently blown by wind?
Yes. It's just always like walking in slow motion. You know, like, it's just,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. So that's, like, my high school story that I always remember.
Yeah, the whole, like, somehow I was voted prince and that means everyone hates me is such a classic thing that we do to ourselves.
Well, like, and I had done that to myself all throughout high school. Like, and I've done this thing in my mind where if I haven't spoken to someone in a long time or we don't have, like, an awesome relationship, I imagine that they must hate me.
Uh-huh.
And it's taken me so many years to, like, break that pattern in my mind of thinking, like, people hate me. And that was, like, a perfect example of, like, you're being stupid.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know.
Where does that come from? I mean, I'm not saying you have to know the answer. But do you feel like there's a place that was born that came from something real and then like it just sort of mutated and like took over, or was it always just like kind of baked in? Because I feel like mine was kind of baked in. I don't know that there was any one thing, but I did also feel like, oh no, that person, they probably don't like me and I don't know what I did, so I can't fix it. And it's like, that's because you didn't do anything, asshole. Like,
yeah,
why are you overcomplicating
again, a lot of therapy. And like I've kind of brought this up in therapy, but I think that it has something to do with one, being a gay kid who wasn't out and like couldn't come out and always felt like I was like hiding myself.
So when you say there was a homosexual moment of pageantry, does that mean that you were a not out gay boy who was sort
100%.
Of...
100%.
Okay.
I didn't come out till college.
I will say that James also did not come out at that high school and... he also didn't come out to college. I'm just saying again.
Listen,
what if you're just alternate universes? Like it's like the Spider-Verse where
we met up at Maximum Fun.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
But Bringing people together.
I think for myself, it was that I was always hiding a part of myself and like arguing with myself about who I was, which I think most, you know, high school teenagers are doing.
Yeah, but that's an intense layer. That's a big layer to be grappling with and not be out. Yeah.
So there was that. And I think there was you know, I mean, my parents divorced when I was 9. And so, like, it really, you know, changed my perception of relationships and how people interacted with one another and all that. There was a lot going on there. There was a lot.
Yeah. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I do. So I have one biological brother, and then my parents divorced. My dad remarried, redivorced, and remarried again. My mom remarried. And so on both sides, I have stepbrother and stepsister.
Gotcha.
My dad's side, they're older. My mom's side, they're younger.
Gotcha. And was that area, again, just... I should just act like I've never heard of this area, because now I'm like, well, James said that people cow-tipped, but I heard, it sounds like it was a little bit of like, this was in the Bay Area, but it was not, you know, San Francisco, Oakland level kind of like stuff happening.
No, I mean, there was
some sort of farmish stuff maybe happening.
There was some cow-tipping happening. I was not a cow-tipper. Hanging out with the cows was not really my jam. But we had like some rural areas, rural-ish areas, but like Fairfield was a city of 100,000 people. Like it wasn't super small. We had a mall, we had an Air Force base, you know, lots of stoplights. Uh-huh. So, you know, like the things that we measure,
right,
I guess, for town size. But being mayor was a part-time job.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So there's
being mayor's a part-time job. That's very telling.
Yeah.
Did you have an association with the base? Like, were you connected? Was your family connected to that? That was not the reason you lived there.
No, it just happened to be, you know, the thing in the town, because we weren't a military family.
Yeah.
My grandfather was in World War II. My uncle was a Marine. But we weren't like a military family per se.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
I think everything you just said also true. Wait, are you and I also the same?
I know, right?
This is wonderful. What a wonderful peppering together of all these different things people have in common. Because you're younger than me, and I told myself the story of, you know, just like the cliche thing that you want to believe, especially if you're a kid. I mean, when I lived in Arizona and was going to high school, you know, nobody was out, although being in like the alternative kind of, you know, gothy, like that was absolutely a place where perhaps not in school, but outside of school, you could be out. But it was not. But I tell myself the story of like, well, you know, again, it rapidly improved in many areas of the United States. Well, you know, when I was in college, I'm sure many high schoolers were just out and proud. And like, you know, I continue to have to be reminded, like, not necessarily. Like,
I mean, some areas, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
It is interesting because I had a friend group in my first couple of years of college, and we were all only like 2 years apart from each other, like a pretty close window. But like the younger two had come out when they were 14, 15. And us that were like the year or two older, we didn't come out until college. And it was interesting to see like how their development as young queer people was so much different.
Yeah.
You know, coming out in 10th grade just made for such a different high school experience than coming out your first year of college.
Absolutely.
It was just totally different.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've talked about this enough or a fair amount, but I was absolutely not closeted about that. But I don't know that that was like a conversation I was having with anyone other than like girls that I also was kind of fooling around with, or, you know, trying to figure out what was going on with, and then other friends. So I never felt like rejected for that reason. But I definitely had it like I had one of those things happen later in my life where I said something playful to like an old friend that I used to fully make out with a lot when we were little. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, no, you know, we were like, you know, we played boyfriend, girlfriend. Like we really got into it.
Wait, she was like shocked.
And she was like, no, we didn't. It was like, this conversation is over. And I was like, oh shit. Okay, got it. Like this, we didn't all evolve into this relationship to bisexuality or queerness or whatever.
Yeah.
And that maybe for her, it really wasn't that. And for me, it was like, yeah, this is all kind of part of who I am. And you know what I mean? So it was weird to like be shamed so far after it had happened. You know, it was like, yeah. Wait, I'm not going to go back and process this now. Like this happened.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But I definitely think, you know, trying to navigate that, that's just exactly as you said, like there's already so much going on as a high school student, just with what your body is literally doing in terms of hormones and all that shit. And then you were saying that you sort of had the argument with yourself. So it wasn't necessarily that you were like, I know I'm queer and I absolutely will not let anyone know. Or were you like, no, I'm not. Look, I'm dating this girl. Ha ha ha. You know what I mean?
Like, I was 100% in denial about it.
Yeah.
And so I'd had people call me all kinds of like, you know, derogatory names in elementary school, middle school. Cause I distinctly remember liking a boy when I was 6, but knowing that I couldn't say that out loud. And then, but not knowing why, mm-hmm. right? Like there's cultural context to say, ain't nobody else saying that shit, so you shouldn't.
Right.
But no one had said to me, like, you should not say that. And so then I did not know what it meant to be gay until I was 10. And I saw Greg Louganis on the Oprah show. And I was like, oh, that's what I am. But I had seen so many other like depictions of queerness on like the other talk shows, right? Like I watched a lot of talk shows when I was a kid. And mm-hmm. so like Ricky Lake and Jenny Jones,
they would always be a conflict manager.
Listen, well, I mean, I grew up wanting to be a talk show host too, right?
There you go.
Right.
That's the closest thing to it.
Right.
I know I have an audience. I would love to do this in front of an audience. Would that make you too uncomfortable? I know we've been pulled out of class. I'd like to take it back in class and just go ahead and set it up right at the chalkboard.
Can we get some chairs up here? I'm going to be out in the audience. So talk to us about, but like that was very
now
much
I want to watch
like
that show.
Experience.
I need you to write that script, please.
The conflict manager class.
Oh my God.
But like, I just knew that like something was different. And so when I was 10 and realized like, oh, that's what I am. I didn't even come out until I was 19. Right. Yeah. So I was like battling with it. I grew up super Christian. So I was like very much so knowing that this was something that was not okay. And that, you know, God hated this and I should not do it and whatever.
And when you say you grew up very Christian, do you mean that you yourself felt that God felt that about you? Or was it like the family and the culture that you were in, but you didn't necessarily believe in God or whatever?
No, my family, like we went to my uncle's church, right? And we were always super involved in church. When my parents divorced, we went to a new church. We were a very active, involved family in our Baptist church. Like we were a very, very Christian family. And so when I finally did come out, that was actually part of the challenge for me. It was like, I had spent years trying to pray the gay away, right? I had spent so many years asking God to take it away. Once I like fully accepted, like this is a thing.
Yeah.
But like I had a best friend that we met in seventh grade, and we've you know known each other ever since. But she was, you know, she's a girl, and so in my mind at that age, I was like, well, girl, best friend,
mm-hmm.
that's supposed to be my girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
and she was like, no, something about that ain't right, but I'll let you figure that out yourself. Which is funny now because she's a lesbian, but
that's probably why. Because many girls would, you know, be like, and he was so tender and like so sweet to me.
Right.
And, like, he listened to me, and I realize now, oh, yeah, of course, you know, he was gay.
Right.
And, like,
well, because I think she actually identifies as bisexual, but like she, you know, is in a full relationship with a woman now. And like, I went through so much of like trying to figure out what it meant for me to like be attracted to a girl or try to be attracted to a girl, but not actually attracted to this girl. But, you know, and like trying to figure out my feelings about women. And there were other girls that I was like, I think I have a crush on her. Or maybe she's just really pretty and I want to be her friend.
Yeah.
But not in the same way that I want to be his friend.
Right.
You know, like
right.
that kind of thing. So it was really challenging just kind of figuring out who I was and what I was going to do with it. And I remember like the first time I I remember like in elementary school seeing a guy named Jay on the playground or whatever, and knowing that Jay was like me, but not knowing what it was, and also like always keeping distance between myself and Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And then in high school, kind of having that same like familiarity and like keeping distance because of whatever I was telling myself.
Right.
And then there was a popular, I guess he was out and gay guy. When I was in 11th grade, he was in 12th grade. So he was like cool and all that kind of stuff. But I remember us hooking up. We're like sort of hooking up and me being like, oh my God, as it's happening, right? Like, I'm completely not in the moment. I'm like, I'll make up a name because I shouldn't say that. We'll call him James.
James, and could you in here, please? We're going to be calling him James. Right. James.
I was just like, oh my God, James is doing what he's doing to me right now. And I don't know what to think. Like, it was bananas to me.
Yeah.
And just always trying to figure out, like, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? What am I going through? And it was tough.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hey there, beautiful people. Did you hear that good, good news?
Something about the baby Jesus?
He's coming back!
Or do you mean the fact that Apple Podcasts has named Fanti one of the best shows of 2020?
I mean, we already knew that we was hot stuff, but a little external validation never hurts, okay?
Hosted by me, writer and journalist Jared Hill.
And me, the ebony enchantress myself, Javel Anderson.
Fanti is your home for complex conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the people, places, and things we're huge fans of, but got some anti-feelings toward.
You name it, we fan-tie you. Nobody's off limits.
Check us out every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your slay-worthy audio.
Let me just throw this in there and then we can pull this right out of the mix too, because it may not be an issue or a factor or whatever. I mean, again, imagine it's a factor, but like, did race play a role? Like, how was that? Were you navigating that in addition to, you know, queerness and all that?
So as a teenager, I wasn't thinking about race nearly as much as I was in high school. I mean, excuse me, in college. Uh-huh. So in high school, I wasn't thinking about it as much as I was in college. I went to an HBCU for part of my college tenure in Atlanta. And so when I left Fairfield and went to Atlanta, I was 19 because I did junior college for 2 years. And when I was at Clark Atlanta, it was the first time I was really trying to figure out like the race element of my life, right? I had spent so much time like immersed in trying to figure out the queer angle. And then my first year in Atlanta, I was sort of out, but like trying to like put my toe in the water. And my second year, I met my now one of the folks who's still my best friend. And like we were roommates and we were both gay. And like that was kind of like my immersion into Black gay culture, right? Yeah. And like being able to kind of figure out like what it's like to be at this intersection of different things. And so the race element for me really came in during college.
I feel like that's I realize I know what I look like and who I am when I say this, but I feel like in my experience of even doing the podcast or just speaking to friends of mine, that seems like it's a kind of a theme that comes up a lot. Even if somebody's straight, I feel like there are a lot of guys that I've spoken to who are like, I didn't necessarily identify with my Blackness until I was in college. And then I was sort of looking back going like, oh, I there was this piece that was missing, or, you know, I was trying to ignore that piece, or, you know, it's just ways of not identifying that in some ways, like there's an innocence and sort of almost sweetness to some of that, which is like, honestly, we weren't really it wasn't really a factor, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but maybe there's a piece of that. But then you sort of, you know, get onto college and go like, wait, there's a lot of stuff that like I just wasn't exposed to, or I wasn't looking at or thinking about that, you know, bears paying attention to and coming to know, you know?
Well, I think what's interesting for me with high school versus college, and I've been thinking about this a lot, especially I find myself getting increasingly frustrated when I learn things about Black history that I didn't learn in school. Yeah. And I feel like there's been a lot of that in adulthood.
Absolutely.
But I think that what's been interesting to me was I grew up in the Bay Area where it was really diverse, right? Like, my best friends were from every walk of life. When I went to college, I did not just go to the South. I went to a Black college,
yeah.
right? And so, like, going to Atlanta, I always reference as being a bit of an island in the middle of a desert, right? Like, Atlanta is very much, we see that when we look at election maps, right? Like, how Atlanta is blue and, like, all of yeah. the rest of the state is red. But, like, it's a liberal place within a very conservative place. But even if we look at the South, like, Atlanta is that within the context of the South, but it's yeah. still relatively conservative because it's the South.
Right.
And so I moved there, and it was the first time I became, like, very aware of being Black, because I was amongst all of these other Black students, which was part of why I went there.
Yeah.
I was excited to see, you know, young Black people who were ambitious, who were entrepreneurial, who were super intelligent, who had goals and things like that. But I had not seen such a concentration mm-hmm. of Black folks in that way. But it also... Atlanta is kind of known as, like, a Black gay Mecca as well,
yeah.
right? And so there are so many people there that are able to be so much more open at that time. And I feel like we're a lot more open more broadly nowadays. But that was interesting to me. It was interesting to be in classes with so many Black folks. I remember I had gone, like, my first 3 weeks before I realized, like, I haven't seen a white person. Like, until it was like someone was walking down the street and I was like, oh, my God. There's a white yeah. guy. Like, you know what I mean? And it was just, there was so much thought about race in college for me because I was going to a Black school, because I lived in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And we actually just did an episode of Fanti where we were talking about colorism. And I was saying how I had never thought about my skin tone in the way that I did in college until I got there. Right. I've always been lighter than both my parents. So, like, that was, like, a bit of a running joke, like, oh, you're adopted. And I was like, wait, but am I?
Uh-huh.
And then I realized, like, I wasn't adopted. But I did not think about being a light-skinned Black person until I went to Atlanta and people referenced my light skin all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And there would always be, like, a conversation of me being high yellow, which is something Black folks will say.
Oh,
but
yeah.
also calling me a red bone, which is, like, another thing that Black folks say about light skin.
Yeah.
So there was just so many elements of race that came into my identity or into my consciousness, I should say, in college that was just never a part of the thought process when I was in high school.
Yeah. I love Atlanta. And I've said, I feel like I've made so many naive statements while in Atlanta. I mean, I'm just such a fucking cliche. Where, like, because I worked there, like, many years ago, like, 15 years ago, I started working there shooting this thing for Turner, and it was such a diverse group of people on the cast and crew in Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you know, at least in my experience, and also, like, very all over the map. Like, there were janitors who were white and there were executives who were Black and everything in between. And that was my experience, my perceived experience, again, as a white woman, totally recognize that. But being in the city of Atlanta, it felt, again, just based on, like, my own personal experience, it always felt, I always loved it because it felt, like, very inclusive. It felt like, of course, there were, like, bars that, you know, a bunch of gay Black boys would go to. And there were bars that, you know, it tended to be just be, like, white folks who work in whatever. I don't even know what white people do there. But
yeah.
anyway, but, like, and then there were just a lot of places where there was just a mix. And
yeah.
and I felt like, I was like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. And again, the naivete is, like, of course, Atlanta's not perfect. And there's a fuck ton of problems that I'm sure, like, you know, that they're race related and that they're class related. But for me, it was like, it felt like such a mecca of, like, and I worked on The Game there, which was, like, I was the only white girl, like, on the cast or crew. But I just loved it. It just felt great. And so that's why I associate with Atlanta. And again, not a perfect place, but, like, so much more just feeling like, oh, there's no, like,
yeah.
You make way more money. You make way more money than me. And, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just, like, the disparity felt less intense. And it just felt like, can everybody look? There's something is going right here that
yeah.
I feel like I'd love to see more of everywhere.
Well, so that's so interesting because coming from the Bay Area, diverse looks different in the Bay Area than it does in Atlanta. Yeah. And so I had a boyfriend who was from Phoenix, Arizona. And like the area of Phoenix that he was in was a more affluent area of Phoenix, but it was like all white and his family was like the black family, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so when he came to Atlanta, he was always noting about how diverse it felt and he felt like there was so much more diversity than when he was at home. But when I came from the Bay Area, I always thought Atlanta was like...
Where are the Asians? Where are the
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And so for him, it was like, oh, this is just so much more diverse. And for me, it was like, diverse here feels like when there is a black person amongst white people or vice versa.
Right.
And so it was an interesting dynamic for me because I was like, oh, diversity means different things in different places.
Absolutely.
But also it shows up in all of these different kinds of ways. And like one of the ways that I've been thinking about lately is I do, I'm a journalist by trade. And one of the things I've been doing now is a lot of like media training and diverse media consulting. And one of the things I talk about in some of that consulting is like, the concept of diversity is diverse within itself, right? Like,
yeah.
What it means to be diverse is not just like, oh, black folks or Latino
Absolutely.
Folks or queer folks.
That's a great point. It's so important.
But there's so much nuance in
yeah.
it, you know? Like,
yeah.
there's that when we think about one of the things I was talking about in the recent work I was doing was In the Heights is such a perfect example, the film that just came out.
Yeah.
Because In the Heights is, you know, held up as, you know, this great moment for the Latinx community to have this amazing cast doing this amazing show, this amazing film. But then when it came out, there was all this conversation about colorism because right. all of the cast were light-skinned Latino people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, there's diversity and then, like, there's the diverse nature of discussing diversity when we think about colorism
yeah.
or the ways we think about accent or language and
yeah.
all of the other elements that branch off of it.
You're so, so right. It's such a, it's just an easy word to use because you're
yeah.
right. I'm from Tucson. My city is like, it is culturally diverse only in that there is a small Asian population, but there are a ton of Latinx folks and a ton mm-hmm. of white people. Who, you know, there's lots of like intermingling. That's the school that I went, you know, the schools that I went to, we were in the minority as white kids. And you're right. Like I can say that's diverse and then I can describe Atlanta as diverse and yet never the twain shall meet. It's not, it's not black diverse in Tucson at all. And you're
yeah.
right. And I need to be more careful about that because I like everyone else sort of use it as like whatever it's like a big catch-all term that you use in convenience for whatever little thing you happen to be talking about. But like, it's way more
nuanced. But it's so subjective, right?
Yeah.
So like, for my ex, like, Atlanta was really diverse because
yeah.
he wasn't used to seeing black folks around and especially in the elements that we were seeing them as far as like academia and
yeah.
professionalism.
Yeah, diversity
and that
of
kind
class,
of
diversity of all those
right.
things that you break down within it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I always cringe when I think about it because there's a conversation around the idea of diversity of thought. And I remember the diversity and inclusion person at Apple was talking about, well, you can have diversity in a room full of white men. And it was like, no, sis, that is not what that means. You know what I mean? Like, yes, one comes from Cleveland and the other comes from Seattle, but that is right. not diversity.
Right.
But yeah.
Oh, bless. Bless. So, okay. So when you were you like, you made the joke, which by the way, I would totally agree with, like, I had no relationship to this, like our stadium or whatever as a place
yeah.
where sports took place. I was like, oh yeah, I remember like, I went out there, like, I think I got my diploma on there. Like there was just no relationship to sports. Was that something that was not really a thing that you were kind of like, using as another shield or as a way to kind of be like, oh, this is, and by the way, not to say that black gentlemen cannot play sports and that black gentlemen cannot play sports. Like, but,
I'm a 6'3" black man. The expectation was that I was going to
right.
play basketball.
Right.
And
right.
like, I remember someone telling me like that I was quote a waste of height because I was not playing basketball.
Sure.
And I was like, wow, that feels great. Thank
sure.
you.
I feel like that's a thing that gets said all the time to tall
oh my
kids,
God.
Especially tall black kids. It's like, yikes, this feels now that feels like an accidental
yeah.
racial profile here. Like,
exactly.
why don't you back off a little bit on that? That's
right,
us.
Right. Let me live my life.
Yeah.
You know? I tried sports and like, I remember I was not the best student. I was always really involved in like extracurricular activities. Right. So I was in theater, go figure. I was in, you know, all of these different clubs with debate team and all. I was in 5 or 6 different clubs my senior year. But like my grades were always, you know, kind of up and down. So I was not able to participate in the sports that I wanted to sometimes, or like I would start them. And I remember like there was one year I was going to be on track and field and like progress reports came and I couldn't do it. I was going to try tennis and I remember, oh, homosexuality is exhausting. I remember my first like tennis classes, like we had tennis in PE and I was like, oh, maybe I'll go for the tennis team. And my only frame of reference for tennis was Venus and Serena.
Sure.
And so I thought that every time I hit the ball, I had it to like scream. I had to scream. And so I'd be out there like swinging the racket like, and they'd be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm playing tennis, right? And it was, looking back at it now, I'm like, I have been gay my whole life. Like, and like, I didn't make the tennis team, you know what I mean? And so like, it was, sports was something I like dabbled in, but it was never a serious thing.
I mean, I'm a little bit in love with teenage Tara. Everything I'm hearing is like, definitely you, junior high.
You just want to be like on the side of the tennis courts watching me scream every time I hit the ball and being like, wonderful. Oh my God, this homosexual. It's wonderful. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
Oh my God. The only thing that I wanted to tie up, if you're comfortable with it, is to just return to, just because I know a lot of listeners can relate, is return to this idea of religion and, you know, feeling like sure. you've been told that there's this authority figure who is, you know, loving and so important in your life in so many ways, perhaps in all the ways, like if that's what you're being taught, to then feel like the ultimate authority disapproves of something you're doing. How did your relationship with God change? Like, how did that evolve? Like, and can you tie it up in 30 seconds? No, right. Not at all. No, but that is something that, you know, is such a big thing that people have to grapple with. And I'm always interested in like what that process is like for folks.
The broadcast journalist in me always loves the moment when it's like, could you really unpack this and do it in about 45 seconds? Because we're almost out of here. Well, I would
say
we
did not mean it that way.
No, not at all. I have had a really complicated relationship with church, religion, and faith throughout my entire life. And I think of them as distinctly different. And when we first started Fanti, one of the episodes that we did in our pitch that we were like, this is the idea of what we want to do for our show. For listeners that don't know the show, Fanti, we talk about the things that we love that we also have some mixed feelings about, right?
Yeah, so
church was one of those, thank you. Church was one of those things that we were like, you know, Travell and I, my co-host, we both grew up in the Black church and we have like a lot of attachment to it. And we did an episode on gospel music and the ways that gospel music is really affirming and empowering and encouraging, but can also be really degrading and, you know, tell me that God hates me or all of those things. And I feel like that episode is a really great representation of my relationship with faith, religion, and church. And so I know for myself, my faith has never really waned, but my relationship with church and religion has always been tumultuous.
Yeah.
Even up until this day, right? Like I've been in and out of different churches because there are different points when I don't feel like church embraces me in the way that I believe God does. And I don't feel like church people embrace me in the way that God does. And so that's been really, really challenging. And I know for myself, when I did come out, I was saying that all of the feedback that I was getting from my family about, you know, God thinks this and you need to be delivered and all of these different things, it was like, it was extremely difficult for me because I already believed that. Right. And so it went from me being the person telling myself that to my mom and my dad and my grandma, my grandparents and my stepmom and like, you know what I mean? And hearing that from all different angles. And in some recent work I was doing in therapy, it recently occurred to me that I think I'm a person who deals with depression and anxiety.
Same.
Heavy on the depression, lighter on the anxiety. But
heavy
both
on
are
the
very
anxiety,
present.
Lighter on the depression.
Listen, it's a perfect match.
This is fantastic.
And so I really believe that depression started for me, like, I think the seed of depression was started for me when I was six, and I liked a boy, and I knew that I couldn't say it. And sure. I think the first time that, like, depression really showed up for me was when I was nine and my parents divorced, and, like, my whole world was kind of thrown on its head.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, fortunately, our the judge in our parents' divorce, they mandated that we go to therapy. And so that was like my introduction to therapy. And I say all that to say that, like, it's been very up and down for me, because I know that I've had this feeling that what I was being told did not resonate, like, about what God was, that what God thought about me or what God believed about me. But it was just always in direct conflict with what I was being told. Sure. Or being taught. And so now as an adult, like, I still believe in God, and I still believe, I still have faith, but I've, like, explored, you know, dabbled in different religions, and kind of have come to the conclusion that, like, all of it is the same, right? Like, all of the faiths are the same, all of the religions are the same, all kind of, like, leading to the same God, and you have to attach to what works for you. And if you don't believe in God, that's fine too, right? But it was really, really difficult for me. And I remember shortly after coming out to my family, having one of those moments that I can now recognize as depression, where I was, like, really high highs and really low lows, and, like, kind of going across a space of 10 minutes. And I remember having a prayer in that night, because I was a barista at Starbucks, like a lot of gay men. And I remember, like, sitting in my car during break and thinking, like, I was so happy when I was at work 10 minutes ago, and now I'm sitting in my car, and it's, you know, a very 90s kind of or 2000s kind of TV show. It's raining outside. I'm sitting in my car and I'm sad. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know what God believes about me, but I don't think that God wants me to do this and, like, feel this way so volatile all the time.
Yeah.
And so I prayed and I was like, God, I've been asking you to take this away from me for years, and clearly you haven't done it, and it's something that I can't do. So I trust that if this is something that you want to change, that you will do it. But I'm going to release the idea that I have to change. And that was a pivotal moment for me.
God,
it was really
huge.
Freeing.
It's so huge.
Yeah.
That's so
yeah.
crazy. And did you, and then was there a point at which that sort of evolved into, like, and in fact, you didn't take this away from me, because this is a huge part of what makes me the person that I am and gives me the heart that I have and the capacity for compassion and love and joy that I have.
Well, it took me years to get to that point. Like, there were always, like, remnants of feeling like, well, maybe God does actually hate me, right?
Right.
But there were years of me questioning it, of me, you know, discussing it with friends. And I remember hearing a pastor reference being gay as a gift, and I was like, whoa, slow down, right? And, like, trying to figure out what that meant, and,
yeah.
you know, all of these different things. It was a long path, but I'm, you know, I'm really grateful now that 36 years old, I can say that, like, I feel a lot more confident in who I am, and I feel embraced by God in a different way than I ever did when I was in my teen years.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hello, I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And we host Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us.
Every week, we share media that made us who we are. Things like Archie Comics,
Sailor Moon,
and lots of Taylor Swift.
And now that Riley's an adult, it comes with 100% more butts.
And now I am totally comfortable with it.
So check out new episodes of Still Buffering every Thursday on MaximumFun.org.
Butts. Join in, Riley. Butts.
Okay, let's jump into this MASH game. As you know, you will end up within a mansion, apartment, shack, or house. That's kind of built in to this process. For our first category, let's do three places in the world that you would love to have a second home. And it doesn't necessarily have to mean vacation home, but it could.
Okay. My first thoughts are New York, South Africa, and I gotta make this third one a good one. New York, South Africa, and let's do like, I hear Australia's racist too.
I feel like it might kind of be.
You know what? We shouted out Cleveland earlier. I'm just gonna put that in there.
Shout out to Cleve. Shout out to Cleveland.
My third house is in Cleveland. That's so random.
I've recently said this on the podcast about Cleveland. Everyone I know from Cleveland loves Cleveland and is very defensive of Cleveland and is like, don't you talk about Cleveland. I'm like, I have nothing to say that's bad. I have no expectations whatsoever about Cleveland one way or the
other. I've been once for 2 days. I've no opinion.
I've never been. And I have no doubt that it's lovely. Okay, great. I'm happy that it's on there. Let's do second category, three foods that in this reality perhaps you feel ecologically guilty about, or it's just fatty, and or you want to eat all of the sugar but it makes you feel sick afterwards. I'm stripping all of that away. In this alternate universe, you can have whatever you want in perpetuity and you'll never nothing, there's no ramifications.
Okay, so first of all, the fact that you're throwing this at me while in a week that I'm off dairy is really, really offensive. God hates you.
That's right.
And so the number one thing is macaroni and cheese. Macaroni and cheese is, I'm always going to try it if I see it in front of me. Yeah. I'm usually disappointed, but I'm always happy to do it.
Yeah.
I would also say cheesecake in all of its many forms.
Right.
And then, you know, I'm a big fan of a brisket, right? Oh, no. We're not going to go with
that
meat.
Was such an abrupt.
Sorry, no.
It was like a different personality took over.
Exactly, right?
Sentence.
I'm actually craving brisket right now, which is the reason that I was thinking that. But the other thing that I really am in love with is mashed potatoes.
Great.
I love a good mashed potato situation.
Please. That's definitely, I feel like a great mashed potato is one of those like almost sad experiences. Like a great, sometimes that great bite of food, you take it and you're like,
You're like, so thank you so much.
It's I'm having a relationship to the future me when I'm done eating these. And like, I miss that. I miss these. And I haven't even, you know what I mean?
Mashed potatoes.
Very, very
I would
nice.
Go make them right now if I could add butter to them.
Yeah, well, I'm telling
but
you.
But I can't.
In this alternate world.
Oh.
You're going to end up with
mashed potatoes
one of these.
And macaroni and cheese every day.
You're going to end up with one. You can have all these other, you can have the other two things. I'm just saying that you'll end up with one that's like, boom, like it's there.
Got it.
Snap of your fingers and you can just eat, nothing about it. Okay, next category, let's do three artists. That could be visual artists, it could be performers, writers, broadcasters, anything that you deem artistic. Three artists that could be from any era, living or dead, that you would love to collaborate on something with. And you don't even have to necessarily know what that collaboration would be. You know what I mean? Just be like, oh, put this person in front of me. We'll figure something out.
So for your editor, they'll love me. I'm going to swap out cheesecake for nachos. We'll discuss it another time.
Great.
My artists, I would not be a self-respecting black gay man if I didn't say Beyonce.
Great.
I'm really intrigued by Jordan Peele's brain.
Yeah.
And I feel like I love the mystery of Prince.
I know, right?
I would want to do something with Prince.
Yeah.
And I'm not a musician. I have two musicians in there. I'm not musically inclined.
I'm not even worried about it. He's one of those people where he'd be like, here's what we're going to do. You
know? Listen, I'm in. Whatever it is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, beautiful. All right. Next category, romance. This could be someone from, a character from film. It could be a character from fiction. It could be a cartoon. Anyone, any era, doesn't matter. Three.
I delusionally dated Dwayne Johnson for 3 years. so I feel like The Rock has to be in there.
Let's throw him
Funny
in there.
Funny story, I broke up with him and then met him a week and a half later. Crazy. So Dwayne Johnson, mind you, the one from like 10 years ago before he was like a big walking bag of muscles when he was just like really fit.
Yes.
Romantic interests. Oh, this is so difficult. I'm like, who do I want to spend that much time with?
Oh, by the way, it doesn't have to be like a marriage. You could be like, by the way, if I get so-and-so, I'm going to have like 2 months with them and then I'm tossing them. It's just going to be sexy times and then goodbye.
Okay. I have a crush on an actor from Pose. His name is Delon Burnside.
Yep.
He's like my current crush right now. And then I'm going to say Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who's this actor that is just fucking gorgeous.
I'm going to have to look up Yahya.
Mm-hmm. Y-A-H-Y-A. You'll be very happy about it.
Okay, great. All right, next category, let's do three movies that you can jump into. You're not reliving the plot. You're not one of the characters in the movies. You're just, it gives Easy. You access to that world.
Black Panther.
Great.
Clueless.
Great.
The Devil Wears Prada.
Ugh. I'm tempted to go to the Black Panther at the Hollywood Bowl, you know, that they do with the, like, the live symphony. You know, I mean, this is happening? There's three nights of it. Three nights.
When is this?
I want to say August. I think it's later
you
in August.
Shut your mouth. The Black Panther Hollywood Bowl. We're going to be on that.
I'm not afraid to go. I'm not afraid to get tickets near you. And or I mean, you. I'm not afraid.
I'm not afraid.
It's fucking friendship. When is it happening right
this
here?
This is September 11th of all dates.
Hello.
Oh my God. This might have to happen.
Right?
Oh, yes.
I've done my good deed for the day.
With the Los Angeles Philharmonic? What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. Oh, I know.
I'm supposed to be in a podcast interview right now. My mind is completely somewhere else now. Sorry.
We could get into that offline. Okay. I got three more categories. I'll zip through them so you can get back to fantasizing about this thing that is actually going to happen. Next category, let's do three alternate careers. And it's like just the upsides of those careers.
Okay. I'd be a teacher or professor. That's one. I would... just the upsides. I'd be a politician.
Yep.
Or I'd be a lawyer. Yeah. When I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a lawyer.
It still holds a lot of appeal to me. I've become one of those people who listens to a bunch of like legal podcasts, and then I'm like, that is a Brady violation. Do you need me to write up an amicus brief? Like I feel like I have an honorary law degree.
I just always love the idea, like, I get to argue with people, like, in a way with structure and great clothes.
Yeah.
What do you want? Like, come on.
You're moving from Clueless into Legally Blonde in this conversation. I just need to point that out.
Very quickly. I'm excited about the third movie that's coming. So, yeah.
Okay. Then second to last category, let's do three talents that perhaps you already have but would like to beef up, or something that is so far afield from like whatever you do know how to do, but we're going to give you the opportunity to wake up with and you've sort of downloaded it Matrix style.
I've always wanted to be a singer-songwriter who could play the piano and the guitar. I know that's all a lot of things, but like singer-songwriter who could play the piano and the guitar at the same time if I felt like it. I love cooking, but I would love to be like a pastry chef.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah, because that's a great choice because I feel like that is the one, like, one of the most, like, you will practice and suck until you're amazing at it, rather than if you just skip ahead and be like, oh, no, I have to toil away doing everything wrong until I got
like, I've been making phyllo dough for years.
Yeah.
Like,
great.
I make my own.
Great.
And then the other thing I would want as a career, I would love to be like a visual artist. Like I can do paintings, I could do sculptures, I would do murals. I would love to be better with that. I'm pretty good with paint, but like I do like geometric things, like interior design kind of stuff.
Yep.
But I would love to be able to like paint you in this moment.
I know. That seems like magic to me. And I feel the same way. I'm like, how can I be so creative in other ways? But that feels like magic when I see someone do it. I'm like, I don't know
it
how you're doing
totally
that.
Totally feels like I want to do it so well where you're like, is that a photo?
Yes.
Or is that? And you're like, it might be.
Leave them guessing. Don't
exactly.
Have to
exactly.
Okay. And then final one. Let's do three. We're going to give you three chums, three buddies from out of some form of fiction. It could be a character in a movie or a book or whatever, but three fictitious people, but we're going to bring him in to be your buddy.
That's tough. Okay. I want to be friends with Shuri from Black Panther.
Great.
The little sister.
No. She's so flawless.
I mean, she's amazing. I'm literally thinking, like, who would I want to have, like, my feet up on the couch with eating macaroni and cheese in my living room at 2 o'clock
this
in the morning?
This is great visualization.
Yeah. I want to be friends. Can it just be a celebrity?
Yeah, 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 fine.
I want to be friends with David Diggs and his wife. Have you seen their Architectural Digest video?
No.
They're amazing. I was like, I just want to be their friend.
Okay, all right. I have so much
and
homework.
Then, yes, you have things to do. Like buying me these tickets to the Black Panther at the Hollywood Bowl. And then, I want to be friends with Olivia Pope.
Great.
From Scandal.
I mean...
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Speaking of giving, inspirational speeches that just come out of nowhere where you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you the most eloquent person in the world?
Listen, I mean, I just think, what is it like to be her friend and to just be, sitting up on the phone with her and she's like, ugh, I got to go to the White House. Let me call you back. You know what I mean?
And you're like, I have this one small problem. I shouldn't even tell you. It's so small. It's so petty. And she's like, I got this.
Right, exactly.
Like, I'm
exactly.
sorry, you're going to Olivia Pope my problem. Great.
I would love to be best friends with Olivia Pope.
I love it. Okay, give me a word to describe if you had whatever dream you wanted to have tonight, if you could say to yourself as you're falling asleep, I want to have a dream about this. What is the feeling that gives you inside? Like when you think about it could be ooh, horny, or it could be calm or emotional.
I wish it was something more interesting like horny or vacation, but because I haven't had dairy in 2.5 weeks,
it would be dairy.
I'm still thinking about macaroni and cheese and mashed potatoes. Uh-huh. So I'm like, I would just be wanting to binge.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'm going to put binge is the word. Because that's all I need to get you where you need to be with where you find out which one of these you get.
That's such a bad option.
It's very fine and very, very relatable.
I completely failed at this game with that one.
I will not accept that. I need you to shut your mouth. Except I need you to open your mouth. Because while I figure this out, I do want you to tell everyone again about Fanti, where they need to go.
Yes.
Other things. You are a very busy person and doing wonderful things. So please tell people
this is,
what they need
so
to
So this
know.
Is vamping for 60 seconds, right?
Okay. I'm sorry. Was that not clear? Yes, please vamp. I'm sorry. Was I trying to pass it off as something more than that? Yes, I was. Guilty as charged.
Well, yes, I will tell you all, Fanti is the show that I co-host with Travelle Anderson here on Maximum Fun. Fanti is a show about essentially the problematic faves, the things that we like or love that, don't necessarily always love us back or that we have complicated feelings about.
It's just such a great concept. It's such a great show. And
thank you.
You and Travelle are such perfect hosts for it. And that feeling of where do we give ourselves permission to let something be close to us that isn't perfect, and when do we need to go maybe I just need to walk away from this one. I love it all.
Well, in last week's show, where maybe that was 2 weeks ago, I don't know, but we had this conversation about Chris Brown, and I was like, I think I need to cancel Chris Brown. I think I have to stop playing the music even though I enjoy it. I think I can't watch the movies even though I enjoy them. We've done episodes on Bill Cosby, Michael Jackson, and R. Kelly. We've done Tyler Perry. We've done, the All Black Lives Matter moment that happened last year. We talk about people, places, things, generally nouns. And so that is a big part of my life right now. I'm a president of the National Association of Black Journalists here in Los Angeles. And so that keeps me pretty busy. I'm also now doing screenwriting and working on my second pilot, which I'm kind of developing right now, which is a very exciting, unexpected turn for me career-wise. So that's been really fun. The producer's giving me the light. It looks like you're done with the mash here. So
my version of the light is I pretend it is doze off for just a second. I'm sorry. You're still talking about your work.
You're still talking about you.
That was beautiful and perfect and timed out in a gorgeous way because it did not sound like vamping, and I have your results.
Awesome.
This is all over the place in a great way. Sometimes I feel like there's a theme that emerges where it's like, oh, you said, this was you said you want to live in Paris and you picked blah, 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 French guy as your, you start to see
right.
You happen to get all the French themed stuff or whatever. I feel this is all over the place and I think it's kind of fabulous. For one thing, I want to congratulate you on the fact that, all this being said, this whole life that I'm going to get into with you, even if this is all just like, you're like, ugh, I still need a break, you can jump into The Devil Wears Prada. I'm very pleased that you're going to be popping into
what
that
else
movie.
Do I
it's
need?
Fabulous.
I mean, come on.
But that being said, when you are not vacationing inside of The Devil Wears Prada, rest assured you also have a beautiful mansion in South Africa.
Oh, okay.
This may be or may not be tied to the fact that you are a only the good stuff politician, which I feel like that's a great place for only the good stuff to be coming to fruition. Like, you're only creating positive change, and there's no downside.
I feel like I want Kamala Harris's Twitter bio to say, I'm an only the good stuff politician. Like, I love that. I love that.
So all of that's happening. I don't know where you find time to do all of this, but you are a fantastic singer-songwriter who also plays piano and guitar. This is going to come
that
in very
reasonable.
Handy because while you originally felt like you didn't know what you were going to do if you collaborated with Prince, I now see that you guys are going to write like an album together because
oh, wow.
You're a full-on singer-songwriter who plays guitar and piano. Like you're contributing.
And you know what? It's like an unplugged album. It's like acoustic.
Yeah.
It's completely going left. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. I'm into this.
So that's happening. You are, I tell you, a couple of people who I know are going to be totally into that and also just into the friendship they have with you is David Diggs and his beautiful wife.
Oh, my God.
I love the idea of all of this happening with your companion for however long you want him. The 10 years ago version of a certain Dwayne Johnson.
Ugh. Okay.
And all
I will tell you, since we broke up, he's been like annoying as fuck. It's like texting, it's calling, it's like, dude, move on. But okay.
It's up to you. You want to dump his ass, that's totally fine. But all of this is happening. And then there's so much going on here that at some point you're just going to need to kick back, take it all in, and just feast on some nachos. Because you could have them as much as you want, whenever you want, in with whatever on them you want, in perpetuity, and you will feel zero bad about it in
every
way.
I have to tell you, I'm so glad I made the nacho change from cheesecake, because nachos are like my go-to for any situation. I say I'm an emotional eater, but like I eat for every emotion. It's
I'm happy, I'm sad,
I'm tired,
that's
I'm excited.
That's my first
We're
thought.
Celebrating.
I get great news and I'm like, ooh, what kind of ice cream should I get? Like, it's amazing.
Yes.
I'm such a child.
I'm like, this day sucked.
I do feel like I deserve mac and cheese, though. I do feel like I've earned it. Like, I'm always earning it. I'm always earning it, no matter what the scenario
and
is.
Sometimes the earning is I've had a full day of depression and anxiety. I've earned nachos.
Oh my God, please. I had a conversation the other day where I was like, even though I've done no exercise today and this is the worst time for me to choose to eat something bad, I've earned it because it's scary to make that decision. Therefore,
listen, whatever justification is required. Exactly. Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. So you got a lot of fabulous stuff. And being fabulous,
I'm very happy with this life.
I couldn't be less surprised. This was so wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this. I don't
Absolutely.
Understand. I mean, I do only speak with gentlemen in the summers, but you're just somebody that you make me laugh so hard. And I've sort of been waiting
that.
For this summer to come back around, like, come on, Taryn on. So
That's
thank
so
you.
Sweet. Thank,
thank
you.
You. Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate that. Absolutely. I'm excited to do this, and I'm excited to unpack these things because there's so much in my consciousness right now because I'm writing about them. So
I know. Hopefully this even helped, and now there's even more, like, soupy stuff going on, and, like, you know, go to bed tonight, dream of eating dairy, and then you wake up and be like, ooh, I just processed a bunch of stuff
I'm totally going to go take an edible and get into a writing session.
Right,
so, like,
right.
Come on.
Great. Couldn't be more thrilled to hear it. All right. Thank you, and everybody.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Oh, the only thing that I sometimes do is if people think they know even any of Don Henley's Boys of Summer, I invite them to sing some. I also like when people make shit up. And I also like when people say, let me tell you what my summer song is. My summer song is da 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 da, you know.
I feel like I'm pretty good at, like, being the person that can catch on to the song. So if you sing it, I can act like I know it, and I'll be like a half step behind you.
The chorus is like,
okay.
I can see you.
I can see
your brown skin shining in the sun.
Brown skin shining in the sun.
You got your hand thrown back in you. Sunglasses on, baby. I can tell you for you will still be strong.
I feel like I'm really good at this. I just want to be clear. This is actually what I'm developing this with Prince for our acoustic album. Have you heard about this?
It's called A Half Step Behind and Loving It.
Exactly, yes. And it will be all me, like 10 seconds behind Prince, learning to play the piano recorded.
Oh,
right? With a guitar on my back.
I love it. So. I love it. Okay, all right. This is the real end. Thanks, everybody. I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees? Or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.